welcome to the Sleon Podcast. Today's guest is Tyler Wagner. He is the founder of Authors Unite, where he helps people write, publish, and market their first profitable book. He has helped people create passive income, become leaders in the field, start businesses from their books, and much more. Since starting Authors Unite, he has helped 250-plus people become profitable and has helped them become authors. He is also the best-selling author of Conference Crushing, a book designed to help business people and entrepreneurs maximize their ROI at networking meetings, conventions, and conferences. And we got him on the podcast. Hey, Tyler, how are you?
Doing awesome, man. Thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
So I met Tyler via LinkedIn, and he has a cool podcast. Probably one of the coolest podcasts I've seen so far, where he interviews entrepreneurs, and he gives them like a couple questions, and the podcast is usually under 10 minutes. Can you tell us a bit about that journey?
Yeah, for sure. So the podcast is called The Business Blast, and I started that almost 3 months ago now, around 2-3 months. And really the idea behind it was, like, I listened to, like, the Tim Ferriss show. I listened to the Joe Rogan podcast. There's a lot of other business podcasts out there, and they're all, like, pretty long. You know, like, sometimes the Tim Ferriss show is, like, 3 hours. And, you know, there's great content in there, but, you know, sometimes you just don't want to listen to a three-hour podcast. So the way mine works is they're, like, short 5 to 10 minute interviews, and I have a specific set of questions. There's like 7 questions, and they basically get down to like, what's the most valuable business lesson that you have, and like, what are the most valuable life lessons you have? And then it comes out in 5 to 10 minutes. So short, sweet, and straight to the point value is kind of how I've come up with it.
What have you learned from this journey so far? What have you learned, your pros and cons?
With podcasting, I've learned that I should probably have my calendar, give a little more space in between each one, because right now, because they are short, I do it in like 15-minute increments. And if you get behind on one earlier in the day and you have like 20 scheduled, then you get backed up on all of them. And, that's happened to me a few times. So I'm working on that. And, one of the biggest pros, and I didn't really think of this when I started podcasting, I just wanted to do it because I love connecting with people, but not like you connect with people, but it's more of like a business growth hack in a sense. And I didn't really think of it that way when I started it, but it's like, if you really want to meet someone, let's say, like if you want to learn from them, if you were to just reach out and be like, hey, will you mentor me? You know, the chances of getting a yes out of that question is kind of low, I think. But if you reach out to somebody and be like, hey, I'd love to have you on my podcast, and the chances of them saying yes to that are way higher. And then that's where you can create a relationship with them and then, you know, have them in your network for the long term. So it's it helps you in more ways than you would think doing a podcast, I'd say.
What's like the most common trait from like all the interviews that you see them answer the same question? Is there something you've noticed?
So I might do a book and compile all that, kind of like Tim Ferriss, you know, does with his books like Tribe of Mentors. Let me think about that real quick. I think so. One thing, right? So for like business advice. One of the main things that keeps coming up when I ask people that question is that they've gone through so many like failures in their life, and then that's how they've like popped out on this other end of like, and it, you know, success is different for different people, but they've actually failed so many times. And I think where a lot of people, like, if you want to call it mess up, is they don't allow themselves that many failures. So it's like, if your goal is to be a successful podcaster, you'll do like 50 episodes, let's say, and you don't really have that big of an audience yet, and then you drop it. But, you know, the people that I'm interviewing, they would be like, no, like you do like 1,000 shows, you know, like you go all in, keep going. You're going to fail. You'll forget to hit the record button 10 times, you know, whatever it is. And they just kept going. So that's one. And then for one of the questions I ask is like, in your opinion, what's the key to happiness? And one of the biggest answers I've got is actually like a balance in life. So, you know, you can work all you want, but like family and relationship is also so important, and it fuels your work. And a lot of people, I think entrepreneurs especially, they think that like putting in 100 hours a week is the best thing to do. But if you actually maybe gave your family like 20 hours, then those 80 hours left of work could be way more productive and like joyful, and you'd get a lot more done. So that's another thing to just consider, that just because it's more time, it doesn't mean that you got more done.
How do you find these guests?
A lot of different areas. So LinkedIn, I'm huge on LinkedIn. I think people are overlooking LinkedIn in every aspect of business. Like, it is free to reach out to anyone you want. I know there's paid versions, like if you want to in-mail, but as long as you have like a second connection to them, you can connect to anybody or send them a connect request, right? They could deny it, but in most cases, like people just accept. So LinkedIn and Instagram, Facebook, and yeah, those are our top three. Those are our top three.
You know, it's interesting you say that, because I've been using LinkedIn this past month hardcore. And that's how I found you. And it's really weird, but I feel like people take you more, really take you more serious than Facebook. It feels like, yes, you're able to message them, even if you never met them in person.
Yep, exactly. Yeah, I think I say it to a lot of the people in my network. I'm like, honestly, people are not using LinkedIn as effectively as they could. It's all free. That's the biggest thing, too, is it's like with Facebook – you know, everybody's talking about Facebook ads, which are great for business, but LinkedIn, like, you can find your target audience, because these are all professionals. So pretty much if you run a business, you know, your customers are probably on LinkedIn. And instead of, you know, spending hundreds or thousands or even more than that dollars on Facebook ads, you could just go on LinkedIn, search them, and then send them a message or request to connect. And yes, that takes time, but it's all free. So especially if you're working on a budget, LinkedIn is the way to go as well.
I agree. It's free. You don't have to drive to a networking meeting. You can meet everyone all at once. You could, I mean, if you search for any type of job, the person's there. You're a plumber, a roofer, innovator. There's positions called global entrepreneur. I'm not sure what that means. But anyways, let's go retrace. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself, how you started with this, this revolution, I guess?
Yeah, for sure. So about 4.5 years ago, let me go back a little further. So I was in school, in college, and my second year, it really hit me that like nothing, I wasn't going to get a job that I actually wanted from this degree that I was getting. My major was entrepreneurship, and I read the book, The 4-Hour Workweek by Tim Ferriss, and that book just changed my mindset dramatically. And I just like, yeah, it really hit me. I was like, this degree is going to do nothing for me that I want, personally. Right. And that's, I'm not saying everybody should like drop out of school, but so I decided to drop out. When I dropped out, I went and, started reaching out to all these successful entrepreneurs, asking them if I could help them out in any way, shape or form. And then, you know, maybe they could mentor me. And one of them said yes. And this guy's name was Jason Gaynard. He's the founder of Mastermind Talks. And so he basically mentored me for like a year. I helped him put on his event called Mastermind Talks. And I just learned the power of like building a network and how to like build a brand from learning from him and just learning from everybody in his network. And one of the things I learned is if you become an author, you know, you can build an authority from that, right? The root word of authority is author. So to build a brand, you know, like the first thing you should do is become an author. So, you know, I'm like a 20, 21-year-old dropout. Like, nobody's taking me seriously at that point. So I was like, I'm going to write a book. Like, I'm just going to see what I can do. So I write this book called Conference Crushing, and it becomes a bestseller on Amazon and just completely changes my life. And then after that, a bunch of people start reaching out to me like, dude, you know, you're a 21-year-old dropout. Like, I thought you were going down like the wrong path. Like, these are the people like that I grew up with. And but they were like, now you're a best-selling author, like something's not adding up here, like what's going on? And I was like, yeah man, like I've just been learning from a lot of people. I've researched, like, you know, how to write, self-publish, and how to market a book. I took together all that knowledge and just executed it, and it ended up working. And then it turned out a lot of other people also wanted to become authors, but it's just a very, I think it's a mental thing as well. Like, to write a book seems like very daunting. So I helped some people for free in exchange for testimonials. And then I built my current company that I've been running for like 4 or so years now, called Authors Unite. And yeah, since then we've helped, actually now it's over 300 people with their personal books. And then we have other things of like collaborative work projects with books. And yeah, that's kind of how I got to where I am today. It just turned out a lot of people want to become authors and they need some like assistance getting to that point.
Yeah, it's interesting. You think it's easier to become an author now than it was 20 years ago?
Well, definitely, because there's no gatekeeper. So like with self-publishing, like you don't need that acceptance from like Hay House or like Penguin to like say, yes, your work is legitimate enough for us to publish it. Now you could just write like, and I'm not saying I recommend this, but you could just write like a 25-page like short, little book, and then go on KDP, which is Kindle Direct Publishing, put it up there, and you could have an ebook, you know, within a day, you know? So it's definitely a lot easier to do.
Yeah, it seems like with like Apple iBooks and Kindle and all that stuff, it's easier to upload. You know, back in the day, like you were saying, you had to go through a publisher, you had to get signed, but now you're able to control your own destiny.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, if you want to become an author now, the only thing stopping you is yourself, because there's no gatekeepers anymore.
So you help people out write their books, right?
Yeah, so the whole process. So people come to us at different stages. Really, there's two main stages, right? Somebody who like has an idea and they have no idea where to get started. So we can help them with like our programs of like coaching them through the process and then publishing it and marketing it for them. Or somebody comes to us and they've already published a book and it's just not selling or it's not growing their business in the way they thought it would. So then we like peel back the layers and we're like, okay, here's what's going wrong. And then we'll actually do a relaunch for them and like build their back end like sales funnels, because we work with like mostly nonfiction authors. And then we can help people like that, where it's like they tried to launch it, didn't go that well, and then we'll just redo it for them.
And what type of topics have you received from your clients that are about, you know, entrepreneurship, business? What type of books do you usually get?
Yeah, so we're like, I'd say we're like 75-80% nonfiction, 20% fiction. And so we'll stick with the nonfiction just for like topics. So a lot of business books in networking, like one of our best success stories, his book's called Social Wealth by Jason True. And, yeah, his book's on networking. There's another one called Empowered, Sexy and Free. That's by this woman, Jolie Dawn. And we got her number one in front of The Alchemist, which I'm sure you're familiar with that book. Like that was like a crazy launch. And that's, she like helps female entrepreneurs grow their businesses. So yeah, it's like very much mostly in that like self-help business genre, you know, how to grow your business, how to do online advertising, how to do social media, things like that, I'd say are pretty typical.
Yeah, it's something that, you know, you see more new people rising. You know, sometimes they start an Instagram and then they write a book, you know. Do you recommend ghostwriting? I mean, of course, you know, people have their schedules, different schedules. But obviously, you could tell the difference between ghostwriting and people that actually write their own book, you know?
Yeah, so it depends, right? Like, so first, I just want to say to all the ghostwriters out there, I have much respect for you. I do not know how you do what you do. I could never do that. Like, it doesn't matter how much somebody would pay me. Like, I don't think I could ghostwrite a book effectively for somebody else and like actually get their voice. So that's first thing. Second thing is like, it depends. And what I mean by that is, if a person is like a CEO of a business and they are like completely booked like all the time, right? Because they're running the business, but they know that to grow it and to build their brand, they want to become an author. And they just don't have the time. Like, they truthfully do not have the time to write a book. Hiring a ghostwriter is not a bad idea. And if you hire a really good one, like, a ghostwriter can actually really capture somebody else's voice. And it can seem as if though that person wrote the book. You know, like, I've seen it like that. Like, you know, obviously probably like your best friends and stuff can tell, but the general public can't really tell because they don't know you that well. You know, so I would just say it's a lot more expensive. You know, typically you're going to be looking at, for ghostwriting, like a business book, like 20 grand, like minimum for a ghostwriting. Whereas if you write it yourself and get it edited, you know, you could be looking more in that 5-10 grand range, for like a full developmental edit. And there's different types of editing. We can get more into that if you'd like, but there's just different types and they cost different. But, so yeah, to answer your question, I would say it's good for some people. But, you know, if you're working on a budget, I wouldn't even, like, consider it because it's just very expensive because, you know, it takes a lot of time to write a book and it takes even more talent to, like, write someone else's book, you know? Like, that's just – I don't know how people do it, man. I don't.
What is your favorite part of your job?
Favorite part is this. So, so the podcast is new. My favorite part of Authors Unite is – that I remember when I first held a paperback copy of my first book when it came in the mail, and it was a ridiculously like good feeling, like kind of like giddy, you know, like I was like, dude, this is real. Cause like you're working on this thing, you know, for at least months, like sometimes years people work on their books. For my first book, it took me like 4 to 6 months or so, to like get it all together and like launch it. And, but either way, like it's like a labor of love, you know, and like as you're working on it, there's so many limiting beliefs that come up. It's a very bumpy ride. And then when you get that first copy in the mail and you look at it and you flip through the pages, you're like, oh my God, I did it. Like this thing that was in my mind 6 months later for me is now in my hand. So the fact that I'm able to give that feeling to other people or like help them give it to themselves, however it is, whether I do it for them or I coach them through it, is a really good feeling to me, because I know what it feels like. So that's my favorite part, is being able to assist in letting others feel that.
If someone's listening or watching this, and they wanted to write a book, I mean, what are the things that you require before they reach you, to get this process going?
Yeah, so there is like an application form like on our website that we have them run through. And the reason is just because like I want to make sure that I can actually help them. So that's like our first screening, if you will. And then after that, I will personally hop on like a 10-15 minute call with them to just make sure it is a good fit. And if it is, then we'll move forward. And what those like criteria are is like realistic expectations. So if somebody comes to us and they're like, I have an idea for this book. I want to sell 1 million copies in a year. Well, first I'll be like, you know, what's your budget? Because to sell 1 million copies of a book within a year, and it depends, right? If this person has like a brand like Gary Vaynerchuk or something, then sure, like you can do it. But like if you're just starting out, you don't really have an online presence, the chances of that are very, very low of that happening. So want to make sure that the expectations are realistic with the person so that at the end of the relationship, both of us can look at each other and be like, hey, you know, thank you for your service. The money I invested in you was worth it. And I can say, hey, it was really great working with you. We, you know, effectively executed the plan. So expectations, budget, and also just like what the idea or what the book is, and then my team can research the target market. And if we do believe that the goal can be hit, then we will, you know, engage, you know, for a contract and see if we can move forward with working with them. So we just like to make sure, you know, because some people will try to get every sale, but I think that leads to a lot of not so good things. So like I just, before I even offer to let you purchase, I want to make sure that it is a good fit for both of us, you know?
What is your favorite business book?
Favorite business book, besides the better business books that my company does, little shout out there. Favorite business book? I think it is honestly the 4-Hour Work Week, and I almost hate to say it because it's like a lot of entrepreneurs probably say that, but it really did. Like, that book was the reason I dropped out of school. Like, after I read that book, I remember contacting like my guidance counselor or whatever, the school counselor, like, you know, you have one in college, and just being like, I think I want to change my major. Ended up changing my major to entrepreneurship. I was actually accounting before that and I hated it. So I changed to entrepreneurship. And then, like, after talking to a few entrepreneurs, and they were saying, like, to do entrepreneurship in college is kind of silly. Like, you should just get real world experience, is kind of what they told me. And then, like, 3 weeks later, I literally dropped out. I was, and so, like, that book was the reason I dropped out of school, and I would not have started this company or probably written a book this early on in my life if I hadn't first read that and then the series of events after that that happened. So I can, yeah, that book changed my life. I can honestly say that.
Was dropping out the toughest decision that you've ever made in your life?
It was hard because, so thinking back, like, and I think this is true with a lot of decisions, like, thinking back, it wasn't as scary as I thought it was because, you know, at the time, all these things kept going through my mind. Like, if I drop out, am I going to be able to, like, come back? Will I be behind? Because you don't, you know, you start to make friends with people in your grade or whatever in college. And I was like, well, if I come back 2 years later, I'm going to be hanging out with kids that are, like, younger than me. And, like, I don't know, all these, like, crazy thoughts started coming. And I was just like, if I make the decision now, I will never go back. You know, like, that's just the way that it's going to be. So, I did it, and it was hard at the time. But reflecting back, it was like, you know, I could have gone back. Didn't have to be such a difficult decision. I could have failed, went back. So don't overthink things. And I learned it from the Tim Ferriss book, is like, if you're thinking about taking a risk, think about this. What's the worst that could possibly happen? It's usually not that bad. You know, it's usually not that bad. So
they say that over 90% of the time, the worst case scenario never happens.
It never happens, and it's not even that bad. Like, if I dropped out, couldn't get back in, worst case scenario for me was, like, I end up back at my parents, which is, like, pretty in my case, is pretty comfortable living, and then I just, like, try again. You know what I mean? So, and not everybody has that luxury, but, like, I just mean, no matter what, like, it's not like I was going to end up, like, homeless or something. You know what I mean? So it wasn't that terrible of a possibility. So
if a high schooler in his senior year has that entrepreneur spirit and he has a business model on his mind, what would you tell him? Would you tell him go to college? Would you tell him go for it? What would you tell him?
So this might, you know, some people would maybe debate me on this. I would say, go to college, but don't pay for it. And what I mean by that is I would do the Steve Jobs way, which is essentially like he would go into classes that he liked, and he went to college and he would like meet people and stuff, because that's what I got out of college, is the people I met that led me to like reading that book, that led me to like make more decisions in my life. So I would say find a college you like, go there, network, join a bunch of groups, but don't pay that like crazy tuition unless you get like a full ride, which does not happen for most people. But yeah, the money for college, in my opinion, is not worth it. The networking is. So that's what I would do. And then start your business at the same time. Like, you know, go for your business.
I totally agree. I usually tell high schoolers, you know, go to community college, go to technical college nearby, save some money those first 2 years. You don't want to get college loans. I got college loans, and of course I have to pay them back. But they're like a big, you know, they kind of like slow you down sometimes after college. But I tell them, go to technical college, community college. You may not know your major then, but you decide it. And then after those 2 years, you'll see, you know, what university you'll continue. But I agree with you 100%. Save money. Don't get into debt. It's funny because like you and I, you know, probably come from like the same age, I think. So it's like back then you had to go to college, it seems like. Yeah. Now it's kind of like, you could, but make it cheaper, you know, like, you know, back then, I mean, it was a good thing to go to, you know, go to a college, go to a dorm and everything, but that's a lot of money.
Dude, it is a ridiculous amount of money. And just One other thing to like add to your point is that I don't know what the percentage is, but I think it's over 50%. Over 50% of people will switch their major. So like to go to pay like an amount like 20 grand a semester or a year, whatever it is for college when you're a freshman, like just starting out and you don't know what you want to do is pretty crazy because like you really don't know and you're going to switch, which is why most people now are on like a 5-year track in college, not 4, because they do switch their major and you need that extra year to finish. So like go to community college for 2 years. It'll be like, at least I know the one in my hometown is like, I think it's $1,000 a semester, dramatically cheaper.
Oh my God.
Go there, figure out what you really want to do. Then if you need to pay that like 15 grand a semester, if like you're set on that, at least you're on a path that you know you want to go down. And then it makes more sense. So I would do that at the very least.
Man, I hope a high schooler is listening to this.
Yeah.
Who is your favorite entrepreneur?
Favorite entrepreneur. Ooh, I got to think about this. Okay, so two are coming to mind, and I don't want to keep sticking with Tim Ferriss for everything. So Tim Ferriss is one of them, but the other one, because I watch Shark Tank all the time, I'm a big Mr. Wonderful fan. And the reason is because, like, I think the way he handles things is actually very genuine. Some people think he's, like, I don't know if I can curse on the show, but just, like, an a-hole. Some
yeah.
people think he's, like, an a-hole. But the truth is, like, he doesn't want you to lose. So like if somebody comes on the Shark Tank and some of the other sharks are giving them like false hope and he knows it's not going to work, it's not a good idea, he'll just tell you bluntly to your face, like, the idea sucks. Like, I'm not – like, this is crazy. I'm not – and like, yes, that sounds mean, but he may have also just saved you like 5 years of your life and hundreds of thousands of dollars that you would have invested in something that he knows is definitely not going to work. So I just like him because I think he's genuine and I think he actually really does care about the people. And I like that practice as just like an underground like foundation of who he is as a person.
I agree with you. He's one of my favorite sharks. Like, yeah, he's a tough guy, but like, look at his logic. It makes totally sense.
Yeah.
And I agree. It's like, you know, yes, your idea is cute, but you're not going to make it. You're not going to make money. It doesn't make sense in this market, whatever. It is. But I agree. I think him is my favorite and Mark Cuban. Tim Ferriss, have you read the 4-Hour Body book?
I have it, and like I've read sections of it, but that's one I did not read in full.
That was the only book that I read. I should read the 4-Hour Work Week, but the 4-Hour Body was one of my, well, it's like the only book that I read from Tim Ferriss. He's a smart guy. I actually found him through Kevin Rowe's podcast and I kind of learned from him. But yeah, the guy is in his own world. He's like Elon in a way. He's out in his own world. Ready for some random questions?
Yes, I'm ready.
What does a global entrepreneur mean to you?
Global. I just remember we were talking about that in the beginning. Global entrepreneur. I almost think it. I don't quite get it either because in my opinion, it's like if you're online and you're an entrepreneur, then like inevitably you're global. So I would just call yourself an entrepreneur.
If you moved to a new city with $100, what would you do?
I would join as many free meetup groups as I could. And I would bring like 2-liter Pepsis to all the meetup groups so people would like me. And like then, you know what I mean? They're like, oh, he's like, and then I would become friends with all them, learn from them, and hopefully make a ton of money from the knowledge I learn and the networks that I've created.
What job you would not be good at?
Oh, accounting. Anything that is not people related, I would be terrible at.
And how do you have your pancakes?
Pancakes? My mom's homemade pancakes. That's, I guess, with a little bit of butter on there, some, like, fresh maple syrup that were, like, organic, like, from the local, like, farms and stuff. Oh. So all local mom made, if you will.
If you had to talk to one of these three guys in person, who would you pick? Gary Vaynerchuk, Grant Cardone or Ty Lopez?
Vaynerchuk.
I'm with you.
Yeah. Yeah. You would mess me up, I think. I like that, man. Tell me what's going on, you know?
You know, it's funny because I knew about Gary since 08 before he's big time now. And I saw that guy's like, that guy has so much potential. This guy, and it's funny because, you know, he says that people start, you know, usually stop watching his content because it's become repetitive, but I keep watching it because it's still encouraging.
Yeah, I like the vlog. It does get repetitive, but like, it's fine because, dude, when you really think about it, it's not that things are that hard to think about. It's just the action of doing. So it's like, yes, Gary Vee is obviously successful. He works 16 hours a day. You know what I mean? Like, he works a ton and he's very productive. But so that's, you know, obviously he's successful. But then to actually take action on that yourself, that's the hard part, you know? So that's why I like to watch him, because he just is common sense. He's like, you're not successful because you're not putting in the work.
Yeah, which is interesting because it speaks to a lot of the millennials, you know, where, you know, they just need to speed up the process. Sometimes they just stay idle. But how can people reach you?
Yeah, for sure. So authorsunite.com if they are interested in the books. But if not, you know, if interested in just connecting, I'm always open to like an email, and I'm happy to like help any way I can, or just connect. So Tyler@authorsunite.com is my email, and that works for me.
Tyler, it was great talking to you, man. Any closing words?
It was great talking with you too. I hope, you know, your audience gets value from this, and I really appreciate you having me on. And yeah, we're going to have to meet up down in South Florida soon. So
yes. We're nearby. We're like about an hour away. That's awesome what you're doing with the podcast. Keep doing it, because I was listening to a few this past week, and it's, you know, each one's different. Each one, like, you have like a whole different dynamic, and I see those guys really expressing, and you're giving them a voice, because, you know, some of them, you know, probably don't go much on podcasts, probably not, but like, you just see like their passion, sure. You know, so.
Definitely. Thank you, man. And I need to hear that. The beginning stages of a podcast, when you're, you know, when you're not seeing the numbers yet, like, to keep going, you got to have some motivation. So I appreciate that.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you very much, Tyler, for coming on the Sleon podcast.
Thank you.